listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, I'm Alan Cardoza. And as some of you know, I'm a licensed private investigator and certified instructor in nonviolent crisis intervention with 30 years experience working with families in crisis. I'm going to bring you knowledgeable guests on a variety of topics. This show brings you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Answers for the Family will address such issues as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, self-defense, building self-esteem, and dealing with addictions. Today's topic is locating parentally abducted children, and our guest is internationally renowned investigator Logan Clark. Logan has over 30 years' experience in conducting special investigations and troubleshooting in foreign countries. From Los Angeles to the Philippines, the Sudan to Dubai, Logan has lived and or worked in over 30 countries and has major contacts in most of them. These contacts range from top government officials to organized crime figures. Logan, tell our listeners why it's important to have contacts at both ends of the spectrum.
So you don't wind up in jail. You can't do it. 60% of our business is done through the contacts that we have. The ability to do or know where to go, know who to see, know who to give incentive funds to in foreign countries and things.
Well, I could see where the government ones would keep you out of jail, but the other side of the spectrum?
That's not, well, that, actually both of them can keep you out of jail. It just depends on what you've done, you know, and who you need to know. The street, obviously, you need to know when you're doing something that is not going to involve the authorities, which a lot of times happens. We'll go to foreign countries and do something where the last thing, even if we have FBI warrants, which we usually do, we have international warrants, everything, but they're not recognized in most, especially third world countries. Even not third world countries, I mean, they're not Japan, for Christ's sakes, they're not recognized. So you have to have contacts. You have to know where. It's like I always tell my clients, if you're going to, there's no doubt, I don't think, in anybody's mind, unless they live in a cornflake box, that bribery, you know, works. And not, I'm not saying in the United States, you know, you never try to bribe a police officer or anything like that. But in third world countries and other countries, you do. And when you need it on a high level, you need to know the contact to go to. You need to know who you can pay off, how much you pay them off, and you go to the top of the stairs, not to the bottom of the stairs, because you'll run out of money if you start bribing people at the bottom of the stairs. You use Reagan's theory. You go to the top of the stairs, give somebody $10,000, $20,000, and say, I don't care who you got to give this to, I don't care who you got to share it with. When I cross that border, when I do this or that, this needs to happen. I don't care how you do it.
Exactly, and let them do the trickle-down theory.
Exactly, exactly, yes.
Well, I know, and for the, so the listeners know, Logan and I go back about 30 years. So I know a lot of the stories, but I realize that you as listeners don't know. So, Logan, if you could walk us through a couple of things, because I know there are a lot of people, and this show goes internationally. So there can be people in any country that is listening to this and may run into a situation to where their spouse has taken off with their child, and they've run to another country. They've gone to local law enforcement that have said, I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do. Explain to them what people like us can do.
We are the people, well, not necessarily. We're the people that 85% of the time, embassies and the authorities say, don't go to these guys. Don't go to private detectives. Don't go to people that are going to go over and take your kids, you know, steal your kids back again. We never kidnap children. We re-kidnap them. We rescue them. I'm sorry. I lost the thought. Right, I just went right on my head.
No, we were just talking about the situations. They can run into the situation, and if it's in the United States, granted, they can get some assistance from law enforcement. But when they go into another country, it becomes a different issue.
Right.
And one of the things I think you were starting to get towards, and having worked some cases with you, I think people are getting a picture of what this is, and they're envisioning this as something that might be very traumatic. Well, understand, those of you that run into the situation, it is done in a way that is psychologically sound, so it's not that traumatic. So, for instance, if you're going into another country and your child has been taken there, Logan is going to have someone there that's going to be able to psychologically deal with the child. There's going to be a videotape of the parent, or the parent's going to be there telling the child, don't be afraid, these are people that are here to help, they're here to get you and bring you back home to that parent, that custodial parent at this time.
Yeah. Our main concern is as little trauma as possible. And we want, as when we pick the child up, we don't go breaking doors down. We don't, you know, jump over walls and helicopters fly in like, you know, in the movies and stuff. Once in a while. You and I have done a couple like that.
I believe there was an HBO special on one of yours.
Yes. You've got to set it up so that you know, you go in and it's like a bank robbery. I mean, you plan it down to the second, absolute second. How long it takes you to get from here to here, how long is it to the border. What you want to do is get the child into the parent's arms, the custodial parent's arms, as quickly as possible. That doesn't necessarily mean having them in the van when they're grabbed in the van, because it can be way traumatic and noisy, and then the parent can get upset just as much as the child can. Usually we try to get to a safe house or a switch car as quickly as possible, within 3 to 5 minutes. And the reason you do this is because the authorities, with your FBI warrants, with everything, it does you no good in that foreign country. But once you get that child in your hands and into that parent's hands, immediately the table turns. The car, you all of a sudden, you know, have a lot more trumps in your hand. And then immediately upon getting to the border, you're safe. You just got to know which border to go to. I mean, you can go to the wrong border if you don't know international abductions. You can literally go into another country, and if you don't know those countries and the way the government works, that government can send you right back to where you just kidnapped that child from or rescued that child from, and you will go to jail. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
Exactly. And in fact, the countries you're talking about now are ones that are not Hague signatories, and that is the Hague Treaty. It's international law. There are many countries who have signed it, which allows your investigator to be able to go over there and bring what's called a warrant in lieu of writ of habeas corpus. They can have all the documentation, and it says that they will honor the American law. At that point, depending on the country, you can bring local people in. What Logan's talking about now are those countries that have not signed the Hague and are not going to honor American law. And it's a great point. If you start in one of those countries and you think that you're going to move into another country and it's going to be wonderful, it's not, if that one is not a Hague signatory.
And you should not, excuse me, you should not, just because someone is a Hague signatory, you should not automatically think, oh, I'll be fine. I got my warrants. I've got everything. This is I can go over there and I can just have this taken care of. I would say, in my experience in 30 years of doing this in as many countries as I have, I would say that 70 to 80% of the Hague Treaty countries, depending on who the kidnapper is, if they have money, if they have power, if they have contacts, you can take the Hague Treaty and use it for toilet paper, because it means nothing. There are little things in the Hague Treaty, for an example. There's these little loopholes, like in all political BS. There is actually one phrase in the Hague Treaty that prevents the entire thing from working. I mean, there's many, but one line in itself, you cannot, even with a Hague country, from one Hague country to another country, that child cannot be forced to go back to a country, even if the child was kidnapped from that country. You cannot force that child through the Hague Treaty to go back to a country that is unsafe or unhealthy, okay, for the child.
Right.
Los Angeles is unhealthy. The smog.
Because of the smog.
Yeah. You can and the gangs, and you can use all kinds of reasons, and I've actually had them use that. And they will file papers and say, no, you know, this is where they live, this is the country they're in, and it's too dangerous for my child, there's too much drugs there, there's too much smog, there's this and that. So they can jerk you around as much as they want to. So it's the Hague Treaty is great. It's a beginning of hopefully what someday, you know, every couple of years it goes by, it gets stronger and stronger and stronger. What's actually happening is they're preventing a lot of the kidnappings with the Hague treaties and all the different laws, you know, the child abduction laws and everything. There, but still, what is it, Alan? 500,000 a year kids mm-hmm. are abducted.
Yep.
You know, 500,000 a year. That breaks down to 150 a day.
Yep.
That 150?
I believe so.
God, I didn't even graduate from high school.
Math is not my strength.
That was pretty quick, man.
Actually, we have my son Chase here.
Chase.
And he's going into high school. So, Chase, you want to do the math on us? You're probably a little closer to that than us.
If there's 365 days in a year and 500,000 children get kidnapped every year, that would be... No, maybe it's about 15 a day. Is that right? About? Yeah. No. 365 days a year. We're a couple of idiots. All these people are out there going, I don't even need calculators, you guys.
Exactly.
Okay, wait a minute. $10 or $15 would only be $1,500. So well, it's what I said it was, about 150 a day. That is a hell of a lot of kids kidnapped, 150 a day.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, we had probably six listeners going into this particular point, and I think we lost half of them on that subject.
Yeah.
They don't even know math.
Yeah. Oh, well. As long as we can get the children back.
Exactly. That's the bottom line. Well, why don't you walk us through one? I know that you've been involved in, and I believe it's somewhere in excess of 200 of these types of cases internationally. Walk us through a couple of them so that people can kind of get a feel for what it is that they go through, kind of the ups and downs. You know, I mean, an example might be the one in Yemen.
Or
Costa Rica,
Or Sudan.
Sudan, yeah.
Yeah. The one in Los Angeles that was taken out of Los Angeles, a 5-year-old boy was taken. They didn't know exactly where he was taken to. The father came to pick him up for visitation, which is when it usually happens. And then the father, of course, just disappeared off the face of the earth. The police got involved. I was actually called in recommended by the LA Police Department. And as I was saying earlier to you, that 80 or 90% of the time, people will tell you not to go to people like us, as you know. Mm-hmm. Embassies will tell them, stay away from them. Do you know, remember when you and I were in, I don't know, we were in some foreign country, and they called our client into the embassy and said, do you know who these guys are?
That's right.
Do you know what these guys do?
That was in the Emirates, I believe.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were ticked out. Yeah, they were warning the mother, and she, that was great. Oh. She said, yes, I do.
Exactly.
Why do you think I brought them here, you idiot?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know exactly who they are and what they do.
Well, in fact, one of the quotes that I thought was great was that the person in the embassy kept saying, you know, you don't understand. You know, they're going to take them. I realize that you're telling us right now that you're just going to make contact with them and that you're not really going to take them out and so on and so forth. And they go, you know, ma'am, you really don't know this. I mean, you really don't know who you're dealing with. And she says, oh, yeah, I do. I absolutely do. And they said, well, but we really think that, you know, they're just going to take them and we don't. And she said, look, if they were going to take them, we wouldn't be here talking to you.
That's
Which
right.
is exactly right.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm.
But they go through a lot of psychological, especially if it's a Middle Eastern country. And I'm not saying, I'm only saying that because of the difference in upbringing and their religion and everything. And you take a child from that is 6, 7, 8 years old, 10 years old, and they've lived in the United States all their lives. They've gone to Chuck E. Cheese and, you know, the 31 flavors, mm-hmm. and, you know, they've got all that. And then all of a sudden, one day, this child is picked up, taken to the Middle East, to Saudi Arabia, Yemen, mm-hmm. I mean, some terrible, terrible places. People carry machine guns like we carry briefcases in Yemen.
Well, and especially if it's a girl.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's a girl, it's terrible. But what they do with the child, whether it's a boy or a girl, is the first thing they do is they put him into a room. And this is one of the parents. This is the mother or the father that kidnapped him. And it's usually the father in Muslim countries. And they will have that child go in every day, 8 hours a day in a room, and read the Quran. Now, this is something I've never read before. It's not in English. They have them in English, but they have them read the Quran every day and memorize it. Now, if you can imagine trying to memorize every single line in the Bible, mm-hmm. that's what it would be like. And in a whole nother language, in a whole nother country, completely foreign to you, everything is different to you, and all you do is 8 hours a day. You're not allowed to go to school. Nothing. So this child goes from America, school, playgrounds, you know, Chuck E. Cheese and everything, to a Middle Eastern country, locked up in a, you know, in a room in 120 degree heat, studying the Quran. And if they're girls, as you say, you know, they're covered up, their faces are covered up. And in many of the countries, they get even more. sick, I guess I would call it. Yeah. They do some pretty sick stuff to the girls.
Well, why don't you give us a success story?
Sudan, a lot of them. Sudan, Costa Rica was. In Costa Rica, after the guy took off, he had a van, and he had charged a whole bunch of stuff on his credit cards, about $15,000-$20,000 worth of equipment for, like, lifting cars up. And the guy was a mechanic, and so it was things so that he could obviously continue his career as a mechanic. He picked the boy up and he bought all this stuff and he put it on a ship. And the only reason that we knew that is because the Los Angeles Police Department had traced his credit card and gotten all the things, and then they found out where the ship, you know, where it put this on, and we knew it was going to Costa Rica. That's when I was called in. That's when the police suggested to the mother that she call me. And they knew that the ship was headed for Costa Rica. So what we presumed that the father did, and it is what he did, is he drove across the border in Mexico and then literally drove all the way to Costa Rica in his wow. van with his son. We went over, and as soon as we got to Costa Rica, we had no idea where they were. We had no idea where they were staying, hiding, anything. And in countries like that, it's not like here where you can just go in and punch in the computer and get different addresses and phone numbers and all kinds of stuff. They're so far behind there that records are, you know, of no use, almost. And so we went to the shipping company. I went to the shipping company, got my local contact. Again, in every single country, you got to have a really good contact with the authorities, with the street people. And so we went to the authorities because we had done enough research to know that the authorities had real good relationships with the dock and with the shipping companies. And we came to them, and what we basically asked them to do was, when this ship arrives, make sure that this shipment that's on there that's going to Mr. X, you delay it. To delay it for a couple of days, just tell them that it's in the back, you can't get it off, one of the mm-hmm. machines broke, anything. Just delay it as long as you can. Call us so that we can get down here and know, you know, when they're going to pick it up, and we can follow them, and then we'll know where they're staying. And so he obviously suspected that. When it was being picked up, it wasn't the father, the boy wasn't there. They sent a truck to come and get the stuff, and then we followed the truck. Long story short, we found out the guy was hiding in the home of a huge drug lord in Costa Rica with 14-foot cement walls around the building and broken glass across the top of the wall.
Cemented in?
Yeah, which they do in third world countries. Right. You've seen all over. And they take soft cement in the top of the wall and they break all these bottles up. And there's just glass all over. It's their version of
barbed wire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a little more scary or something. It's just, yeah. It looks pretty freaky. And so we immediately realized, okay, now we're not going to go in and take him out of that house. This was huge. They had guards with guns, and this was a major drug dealer. And the problem is we want the child, but the drug dealer is going to think we want his drugs, and we want to take him to jail. I couldn't care less. I just want the kid. So we had to get the boy out of the house, which meant much longer staying there and getting them out. And we had to plan a trick in Costa Rica where we literally got the father distracted long enough on a street corner. We had bribed some policemen and stuff, and we were in police cars, and we had a policeman working with us all under the weather. I mean, under mm-hmm. Because even though we had the warrants, Costa Rica still didn't recognize him.
Right.
You got to go through court and everything else. And so we were able to distract the father long enough. They were walking down the street doing some shopping. We were able to distract the father with police, and they took his attention off of the boy just probably for 20 seconds, literally 20 seconds. And a van pulled up. This is what I'm talking about, the timing. The van pulled up. Sliding door slides open, the kid is grabbed, pulled into the van, boom, van is gone. When the father turns around after listening to the police officer, turns around and his son is gone. Starts screaming for his son, where is he and everything, and then it wound up into a chase all through downtown San Jose, Costa Rica, and we just got to the airport in time to get out. But it wasn't, once we had the child, within about 5 minutes, we got to the mom. Right. We got to the van, we got to the mall, so the kid was crying, everybody was happy, you know, the child was happy and everything, as we're doing 60 miles, 70 miles an hour through downtown Costa Rica, trying to evade the guys that are chasing us.
Yeah, in fact, I saw the clips on the news in regards to that one, and it was an incredibly heartfelt situation to see that boy with the mom and how attached he was to that mom, how happy he was.
Yeah, they had balloons at the airport. It was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a rush when you do it because you, for a little while, you know, after you do it and they get together and they're all hugging each other and they go off, you know, which they should, to be together, you kind of walk off with your team and you walk about 3 or 4 inches off the ground for, you know, for a couple of hours. It makes you feel really good. And teams... These things are done by teams. They're not done by one person. You know, you've done it, I've done it. You go in and you do some of them all by yourself. But rarely do you ever do that. You've got to have a team with you. So that's why I always kind of back off when somebody, you know, says, oh, you've rescued 200 or 300 kids. Well, my team has, and you're part of the team, Alan.
Sure.
I mean, we have a task force. You know, there are several of us that have, if we put all of the numbers together, we're talking hundreds and hundreds of children.
Yeah.
You know, rescued. But it all involves a team and team members who sometimes will never get known because you have to remember the only way you keep these contacts, you only be in this business and do one or two and then you'll be done because if you burn your contacts in those countries, you can't go back. And you always have to remember that they're living there. When you're done with your big, you know, rescue operation, covert op, this poor some
guy,
yeah,
person.
This poor guy is sitting there, or girl is sitting in that country. You're all gone. Everybody's happy, and everybody's crying, and the news is waiting in Los Angeles. But in this third world country, the person who helped you is now going to prison, or being whipped, or beaten, or God knows what. So you got to protect your contacts.
Well, exactly, and they have to live there. So whatever their contact is, whatever level they're at, they still have to live there. Raise a family there or conduct their business or their job just as they always had, and they can't do anything to affect that. So.
And we have to give them plausible deniability.
Yes.
As they tell the president.
Yes.
Plausible deniability.
Yes. Well, one of the other areas that unfortunately in this world we have to think about is non-parental abductions. I mean, what is now unfortunately growing again throughout the world, which is known as white slavery. I know that you've worked on some of those cases as well. And I mean, as much as we in America want to believe that this isn't something that happens, I think that it would probably open a lot of people's eyes to realize just how much this does go on, and even in this country. Mm-hmm. You know, but in other countries, you find that it's something that goes on quite a bit.
Yeah, it's a tremendous amount.
Yeah, so if you could tell the listeners a little bit about cases like that and some of the things that they can do to help keep their children, who may be somebody who just goes off to, you know, they go off to visit Europe, or they're, you know, they're going to go on a modeling thing, and they start out modeling here in the United States, and their contract gets sold to another modeling company in another country, and then somebody contacts them from them. I mean, explain some of the things that the parents or people can do to keep their kids from being in this situation.
Well, what they look for, what kidnappers that are getting women into the sex trade, or young boys into it, but mostly women, they're looking for girls that no one's going to look for, basically. That means that they're, you know, 18 years old. They prefer them to be 18 years old. They will get them at 15 or 16. But they're looking for kids that people aren't looking for. That means runaways. Mm-hmm. You know, they can grab kids that are runaways, or they go after girls that are going. They will go here. They make it much more legitimate. They've got to use a really good cover and have a pretty legitimate overall view of what they're doing. From other countries, it's not that difficult. They just say, because they're so poor, they say, you want to go over and be a maid in the United States. Well, every poor person in a third world country wants to come to the United States and be a maid, or a gardener, or anything, because, you know, they can grow from there, which they can't do in their own country. So, number one, they look for people that aren't going to be looked for. When they call the police, when the parents call the police, they say, hey, she's 15, 16, probably ran away, or she's 18, she can go anywhere she wants. Mm-hmm. There's nothing we can do about it. So if your children are planning on traveling somewhere, backpacking across Europe, etc., they should have telephone numbers in every country. There should be check-in times as they go on their trip. If their trip is 2 weeks or 3 weeks, I don't care what it is. Every couple of days, you call somebody. Nowadays, with telephones and everything, you can call pretty much internationally. You can call anywhere you want for very little money.
Well, exactly.
So you have a regular schedule of calls. And if that call does not come in from your child, then you start trying to contact your child, and you know something is wrong if you cannot get a hold of them and they don't get a hold of you. Now, if you tell the police this, that you had this already set up, then they will believe you more. All of a sudden, they will become more concerned about it because right. You specifically had this check-in time and everything. Once they do it, they get the girls, and they actually have photographs of their parents, of their brothers and sisters of family in their country. And some of the photographs are taken through the scope of a gun with the crosshairs, with their brother or their sister or their mom, right in the crosshairs of that scope. And you can tell it's in front of their apartment or it's getting into their car, and the child knows that, the girl knows that that's her dad getting into his, you know, Toyota. And they tell him, if you run away, you may get away, but we will kill your dad. We'll kill your entire family. And they actually make these girls write letters home and say, having a wonderful time, doing great, you know, and they continue to contact them. This goes on for years.
No need to look for me.
Yeah, exactly. That goes on for years, and the parents don't even know about it until somehow they get out of it.
Well, I think another thing that in this day and age that can be done from a prevention standpoint is there's GPS in the phones.
Yes.
And you can give your child you know, a phone that has a GPS system that will find them anywhere in the world. There's now credit cards that you can give them that you can send money on. You can put money on them if they call you and say, look, I've run out of money. They have a card on them. Through the internet, you can put money on that card so they can get money to get wherever it is that they need to get. Those cards can also have a GPS planted
yes.
in them.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, the bad guys know that too.
Yes.
Bad guys know. The first thing they do is take the cell phone away from the kid and throw it away.
Exactly.
Very first thing they do. So those are good things, and not 100% will throw the phone away, because as you and I both know, criminals are basically stupid people. Especially these kidnappers. The organizations are smart. But somebody will screw up, make a mistake, somebody will make a phone call, or they'll take the phone from the child and they'll use it themselves to make phone calls, which is great. Because as long
as you a way to track them.
Exactly. As you know, as long as the phone is on, they don't have to be talking on it. It just has to be on their side or in their purse or whatever. But there should be check-ins. American Express, as a matter of fact, in almost every country, American Express has a what would you call it? Almost like a concierge service. If you have an American mm-hmm. Express card, and you can go into foreign countries, you can get mail there. Mm-hmm. You can make phone calls. They'll get attorneys for you. They do all kinds of things. So if your child is taking off and going around the country, give them an American Express card. And then you can get a hold of American Express. They can get a hold of you through them, and it's a good medium. And never in a foreign country, you just got to advise your kids. I mean, there's too much in one radio show of how to prepare the kids, and you don't want to scare them. But you and I ought to do a pamphlet, a travel pamphlet.
Actually, that's a good idea.
Yeah, of what kids could carry, and you know, the do's and don'ts, because there are a lot of things that the kids just don't stop and think of. You got to be really careful. Kids have a habit, especially teenagers, have a habit of trusting cab drivers tremendously, because everybody tells them, "Hey, man, you want to go to a foreign country? Whatever you want, call a taxi cab driver. You know, they can get you women, they can get you drugs, they can get you this, they can get you, you know, the best shows in town, the best, you know, everything." The taxi drivers know. Well, that's true, but the taxi drivers are also in the street. They're street people. And you'll find that they're either undercover government agents or they're in with the bad guys. And, yeah, they'll find you things, but that's taxi drivers get paid a lot of money by organizations like the Russian. The Russian mob is the Russian word for it is octopus. I can't remember the name right now in Russian, but that's how big the Russian mob is, the tentacles that reach out all throughout everything. They're pretty powerful people. They really are.
Well, I remember the warnings in regards to the taxi cabs just being in the Philippines.
Yes.
And them saying that there's this type of cab that you get in, and uh-huh. there's this type of cab you don't get in.
That's correct.
And we learned that, but that doesn't mean that every teenager that's decided to travel in that country has.
Right. Yeah, you got to try to get the nicer cabs. You and I ought to think about the little book.
Yeah.
You know, and do something for people, because there's so many little bitty tricks that they do, and in bars, going in bars is very dangerous. In foreign countries, you know, there's no drinking age, or if there is, it's not paid attention to. And if you're a good-looking girl, you can be 17 years old or 16 years old and walk anywhere in the world, go into a bar and get a drink. Nobody's going to bother you if you're a good-looking, you know, woman. And you can be slip Mickeys. You can, you know, there's just a lot of things that you can do. Now, there's a coaster. There's actually a coaster that you can take with you, and you can cut pieces. I've advised people to cut pieces of the coaster. These coasters, if you dip it into alcohol, into your drink, if a drug has been dropped into your drink, it'll change color. It'll change to a certain color. And you know immediately that somebody's put a drug into your drink. And you can get these coasters, and you can carry them with you.
I like that. And actually, I haven't heard about that. And that kind of leads me into something that I should probably do. I think I'm supposed to do a little more promo type of stuff here. But for those of you that have questions, questions that you want to go online, put questions on there. We can answer them at another time and email the answers back to you. But this show has its own domain, and it's called answersforthefamily.com. That's ANSWERS, the numeral 4, THEFAMILY.com. answersforthefamily.com. If you have questions about things like that, like what Logan just mentioned, email the question in. We will get it to Logan. We will link to him. And in fact, here before the show is over, I'm going to ask him to go ahead and put his own website on there as well as a phone number if anybody wants to reach him. Also, Logan just brought up about the idea of a pamphlet. If you have ideas for a pamphlet, we can put together. Shoot out some ideas of travelers out there. If you've come up with ideas and said, you know, I ran into this, send that in to us. That's something that we can add in. We'll compile all of that, and we may be able to put together quite a nice travel pamphlet that will help the parents whose children are out there traveling throughout the world.
Exactly, because the police, if you go to the police, and they're great at stranger danger and telling people, you know, what to do and what not to do and how to get away from things, but police officers very rarely travel to other countries and do any work unless they're actually going over to just transport someone that's been arrested, an American. And they don't know. They know all of the standard things that you need to stay. But people like us, like yourself, myself, who go into these countries, who know the streets, who know the authorities and everything else, the things that you and I can put into the booklet are going to be far beyond your normal police officer or your normal counselor that's going to tell you about stranger danger.
Yeah, or even your normal traveler.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. There's, yeah, very true.
All right. Well, why don't you give your
website
address and your phone number for those that would like to get in touch with Logan directly, be it any specialized type of case, not just necessarily a parental abduction or a white slavery situation. We're talking about a world-renowned international investigator that has the ability to get things done in other countries that other people always can't.
So we work for corporations and all kinds of people that want to go into a country. They want to get into a certain business that is restricted and licensed, and or they want to expand to an area they can't expand to. We go in. We know the government people. We can help get them what they need, you know, what they need, troubleshooting along with the investigation. The website is real difficult. It's www.loganclark.com, and Clark is spelled C-L-A-R-K-E. So just make sure that you put the E at the end of Clark. So LoganClark.com. And my email is Logan@LoganClark.com.
All right. And why don't you give a phone number, both a toll-free U.S. number and another number that's not U.S. toll-free for any of the international people calling?
The toll-free number is 1-800-346-4006. 1-800-346-4006. And the office number is 909-337-9700.
All right. Now, one of the things that I'm aware of, and I'd like you to share with some of the listeners, is right now you've got quite a few things going on. I believe you're opening up an office in Dubai. Explain how having that presence in the Middle East is going to be beneficial in not only these types of cases, but in any type of case.
Well, you've got to have contacts in the Middle East like you do anywhere, but there's so much going on in the Middle East right now, good, bad, and indifferent. You know, most of the bad comes from Bush, but there's there's so many things going on. Dubai and Abu Dhabi are we call it Disneyland for adults. It's different than the Middle East in the sense that it's not you're not going into Saudi Arabia where women have to cover up. People think that if you go to Dubai, you know, there's absolutely no alcohol. Dubai and Abu Dhabi are very modern countries, super modern. Dubai is unbelievable, some of the stuff that they are doing. But having a presence there and the ability to move within the Middle East gives us a tremendous advantage. You and I have been there in Dubai and Abu Dhabi for, what, the last 15 years?
Yeah, I think for you it's probably 15 to 18 years,
yeah.
And for me probably the last 10.
Yeah, yeah. And you go and you have to have, you got to have the right contacts. If I need to get into a country, there are certain countries like Sudan and Yemen that you cannot get a visa for. You can't just walk into the Sudanese embassy and say, hey, you know, I'm an American. I'm going to go over and visit. First of all, there's nothing to see over there, and except for people killing people. Speaking of
Yemen, something I'd like you to share with our listeners. You've told me a story about flying over there. with the Canadian flight crew that was helping out to train the Middle Eastern flight crew. Share that with our listeners, because that is one of my favorite stories.
We were on Gulf Air, and the Canadians were from Air Canada. They had taken crews of them and put them in these Airbuses for Gulf Air, the Middle Eastern airline. It's out of Dubai. A very good airline. And we were flying into Yemen the first time we were flying in, and the agents were in different parts of the plane. When we go, we don't go in a group and all sit together. We sit in different parts of the plane, kind of like air marshals, so that people don't know that we're together. And we were flying in, and the woman, the Canadian flight attendant, the head flight attendant, she said, you know how whenever you're going into a foreign country, they always say, you know, ladies and gentlemen, please set your watches back 3 hours. The local time here is blah, 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 or set it ahead 8 hours, 10 hours. If you're going to Japan, you got to set it ahead 15 hours.
Right, as they're getting ready to land.
Yeah. So this lady says, very seriously, and she said it just with this emphasis. She said, ladies and gentlemen, in 15 minutes, we will be landing in Aden, Yemen. Please set your watches back 600 years. And I swear to God, the plane just roared. None of the locals were laughing, but all the foreigners, we just rolled in the aisle of this thing. It was unbelievable. And when we stepped off of the plane, and we stopped laughing, we stepped off of the plane and we walked onto the tarmac. And they literally were taking the luggage from the plane with this little red rider wagon. Little red wagon like your child has, and they had all these suitcases stacked up on this little red rider wagon, and the airport was the size of a medium-sized McDonald's, you know, I mean a good size McDonald's. Yeah, where you go in and sit down, have the little play, and that's about how big the embassy, or when we landed, that's how big the airport was. And as we were walking across the tarmac, there's 50 caliber machine gun bullet holes all over the building, through the walls, through the windows. There's places where grenades have gone off. And we all were walking off. We looked at this place. It looked like a war zone, like we arrived in Iraq, but this was 1991. And I turned around to my guys and I said, man, she really meant it, didn't she? 650 years. And they almost fired her. They almost fired her. She was crying when we got to the hotel, the Movenpick Hotel.
Oh, didn't they quarantine her?
They kept her. Yeah, kept her in the hotel. She couldn't go anywhere. She was really upset. And I don't know. They may have eventually fired her, or she might have left. But she was just so stressed out. She couldn't take it anymore. She just couldn't take it anymore.
It was a great line.
Yeah, it really is. Please set your watches back. And she took that pause, man. Please set your watches back 600 years.
And when you stepped off, you understood.
Yeah. And I actually had, you know what, a couple years later, I was in London, and I was with the royal family
UAE, one of the Emirates.
Yeah, one of the Emirates. And I was there, and I was at a sheikh's house, and a prince from Saudi Arabia, who's a good friend of both of ours, he came in, and we were all playing poker downstairs. Anyway, he told me to come upstairs and he needed to talk to me. And he's an old friend. And so the prince took me upstairs and he said, Logan, I heard a story. He said, I was in Saudi Arabia and I heard a story on Gulf Airlines about a flight that was going in. And he said, I heard you were on the flight or your men were on the flight. He said, I want to know if it's true. And he turned around and told me the story I just told you and looked at me and he said, did that really happen? And I said, yeah. Yeah, but what's going to happen to the poor stewardess? I said, you're going to fire her a couple of years later? He said, no. I think it's hilarious. He said, I just couldn't believe it was true that somebody actually did that. And I said, yeah, they definitely did. So it went around.
Well, yeah, and the prince you're talking about and the sheikh and such, what maybe a lot of Americans don't realize, these are very well-educated men, educated in England, mm-hmm. At some of the top schools.
Absolutely.
You know, so... it's not the same as the people that you're dealing with when you're landing in Yemen.
Right. But these are the people you need to get the visa.
Yes.
To go. When I was trying to get into Yemen, the first time I went, the sheikh sent me down with his assistant. And we went down and I said I wanted to – he even wrote a little note, the sheikh did, and sent me down there. And they turned me down. And this was in his country. This is the Sudanese embassy in this sheikh's country. And so we came back, and his assistant said, they said no. And, ooh, man, he said, what? They said no. And he picked up the phone, and he started rattling in Arabic at some people. And he told me, he says, you go back now. And we went back, and they got us in, gave us tea, apologized, everything, and we got a visa. Of course, I went in as a journalist or something. I think I went into Yemen and Sudan as three or four different things. I had different IDs, different names. One time I was a journalist. In fact, the SIS, British Intelligence, walked up to me in the British Embassy. We were having a beer, and he said, Logan, he said, last time you were here, you were a journalist, weren't you? And I went, I was a journalist. That's when I had another career. And they said, and now you're here doing, you're doing pre-location hunting for a desalinization plant.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a desalinization. And I said, that's what I'm doing now. He said, that's a hell of a jump from journalism to desalinization. And I don't, it sounded so stupid, but I just came out of my mouth. I says, well, I used to write about desalinization. I said, so I went into what I know.
That makes you an expert, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, if the guy would have asked me one single question about desalinization, I wouldn't have had the slightest idea. But you get busted once in a while, but at least it was by the good guys.
Well, exactly. I was going to say, if it's somebody that is on the right side, they're not really going to mess up what we're trying to do.
Right. They're just curious.
Well, I'm not sure, but I think we're getting pretty close to being out of time. I want to really thank you. I mean, I'm so happy that you could be here.
It's a gas. I enjoy coming on, and it's sort of like what we do, all you and I do, all over the world.
Exactly. But what I'm hoping that you'll be able to come back again. I want to be able to do this, from time to time. Let our listeners know what's going on out there. Maybe even if you could remotely get together with
sure.
us.
You know? I can call, from where I live up in the mountains, so I can call in or something.
Well, either from there or we're set up on Skype, so if it's, if you're in Dubai, if you're working a case,
right.
wherever it is that you might be, if you can call in, let us know what's going on.
So this goes great. This is all international. This goes all over. So I got to make sure that I don't discuss the rescues that you and I are doing now in foreign countries.
Exactly.
Because in those countries, they might be listening.
Yes.
We're coming to get you. Ha 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 he ho ho.
So, and I want to share with everybody to get in touch with us. Again, you can send things in to answersforthefamily.com. You can email us. You can call me at 800-899-8585. That's West Shield Adolescent Services or West Shield Investigations. If you want to reach Logan, again, Logan, if you can give us those numbers again.
1-800-346-4006. 1-800-346-4006 or 909-337-9700.
Okay, and one of the other websites that you can reach me at is at westshield.com or at transportingteens.com. We hope that you will continue to listen to us. Listen next week. We're going to have new guests on new topics, and we are going to be there for you to answer your questions that you have in regards to the family and the world at large. Thank you. Yeah, you can.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.